obligation to deal with the fact that it is a system that is part of the problem. And when we talk about Portland police officers, we're talking about people who have been taught, apprenticed by people before them. And no one can sit here and argue that in the last 200 or 300 years that our particular culture has been affected by an oppressive system. But when we challenge y'all to attack the system because people have been taught through generations that there's a problem, the police force generationally has been a problem to the African-American community. We're not saying that we have not committed crimes. People have. But there's just as many white Americans as there is black Americans incarcerated. But white Americans don't face the same fear when they're pulled over in their vehicles that I do. Not because every police officer is a danger to me, but because there is a particular system that exists that is dangerous to me. And that's what we're saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's time to say, if the system, if the same union have protected the same oppressive system, then at some point we have to counterbalance that. That's the challenge to the mayor and the commission here, is what are we going to do as a people and what is the leadership going to do to counterbalance a system that has some issues? Not that it hasn't done better, not that it hasn't tried, but there are some issues. And all we're saying is when are we going to be serious about the fact that if a police officer who hated minorities taught another police officer to hate minorities, and may not say hate minorities, but when I trained you, I taught you to deal in minority cultures a particular way, then I'm implanting things in you that you might not know about. So yes, I'm not saying that every cop who deals with me is racist. I'm saying the system that taught him is definitely racist. So this is a challenge. This is a challenge, I believe, for the city of Portland, is that not only is racism an issue, classism is an issue. The poor, the oppressed generally is treated differently in their particular communities. This is why my auntie say, where does he live? Not because you have to live in my community to work there, but when you live in my community and work there, you deal with the people differently because you understand the people. What we're saying is that Officer Hurst clearly does not understand that every Portlander, black, white, because he's clearly offended all Portlanders in this particular case, in his history, that every Portlander is not an offense to him. He sees civilians that he come in contact with as his enemies the moment he comes in contact with them. And that's a problem. Because he's supposed to be serving the people of this community. And at some point, we have to begin to say, how many Portlanders with no weapons, no guns, for instance, Portland has a choice of evils law. You cannot do more hurt to a person than the perceived danger that they bring to you. If I'm fighting you, if we're fighting and I haven't perceived to kill you, you cannot kill me. This is how our law is set up, to protect individuals from extreme consequences of minor offenses. Our police force need to have a certain level of the same accountability. You being tired, you being angry, you being having this perceived fear is not justification for murder. And the police force is allowed, their fears is justification for doing unlawful things. There was not a violent weapon in Quintus's possession. It was a perceived violence. And because the violence were perceived, his actions was justified. No other civilian, no other citizen. Police, everybody always say, well, I understand that their lives are in danger. Everybody's life is in danger every day because there are violent people who might put your life in danger. Our country, our community, there are people who constantly doing violent things to Americans. They are labeled terrorists. Yet the police force can continue to shoot unarmed people in Portland and they're labeled as servants to the people. They should be demonized and held accountable in the same way that if anybody walked up to you, Mayor, and did something harmful to you, and they say, well, I thought you were going to punch me, Mayor. Are you going to say, well, because you thought you're in danger, then you should be given a pass for your offense? No. Certainly you're going to say perceived danger is not justification for harming me. Police officers have been given the right because of perceived fear to do horrendous things. And at some point, that has to change. Your perceived fear, you're human. You have fear. I'm 33 years old. And sometimes when I'm at work in a factory and I'm walking around by myself, I have kitty perceived fears that creek was something dangerous when it was just the wind blowing the door open. Is my perceived fear justification for bad actions? No. And police officers have that right. And not only have this city, through not holding them accountable, and they empowered union, have allowed them to have this right that perceived fear is justification for harming people in Portland. This is ultimately the issue. If Qantas would have pulled out a gun and aimed it towards police officers, me and my family wouldn't be sitting here today. But nobody said that he did. So how can you not say that your life was really in danger, but the perceived fear was enough? That's the problem. And what we're saying is that has to change. That's why people at bus stops and on corners are being hurt by police officers who say, well, we perceived that he was being a little aggressive, maybe because he was upset and he was expressive. Nobody holds a police accountable when they yell at you and because you saying that under their job, sometimes they have to be commanding. And they do. But if I hurt a police officer because he yelled at me, then I will go to jail. But police officers are allowed to do this. Perceived fear allowed them to hurt people. And at some point, that just has to change. That's why we're here. Because if somebody would have attempted to hurt a police officer and they would have protected themselves, nobody would have been here. Nobody would be screaming and yelling injustice. But they haven't. And that's the problem.
Okay.
I'm Bella.
Tell your full name.
Bella Aguilar. Qantas was my boyfriend. Sorry. I wrote a narrative essay for my college class about Qantas that I'm going to read. His dreads were getting long and covered his beautiful deep brown eyes, and the blonde was starting to fade out of his dreads. His skin was dark, the darkest skin I've ever seen. Sorry, my phone's doing something. Just turn it off.
Turn it off. Everybody can hear it. Everybody hear it. Excuse us.
Sorry.
Wasn't prepared. We had a cell phone on.
I'm sorry.
It's working.
It's okay. His skin was dark, the darkest I've ever seen. It was flawless, no marks. He stood about 8 inches taller than I was when I hugged him, and his chin rested on my head. He'd always smelled of soap and Giorgio or Armani cologne, his favorite. His arms fit perfectly around me, and his hand fit perfectly in mine. I was staring at his deep brown eyes when he grabbed my arm and told me we were leaving. He was sick of the security following us. So I followed him and grabbed his hand while we walked. I was wearing some sweats and his hoodie, and my hair was a mess of a bun. I felt like a bum while he looked flawless, as always. The cold air hit my face, and I flinched while he put my hood over my messy hair. I smiled and kissed him on the cheek. He always knew what I needed, all the time, without me even having to say anything. Security followed us outside, so he got mad. He told me to keep walking, but I stood right there, being stubborn as usual. He turned around, and so did I. He looked at security and asked why they were following us. Did they have a reason, or were they just being assholes? They didn't say anything, so he just walked away and grabbed me before I could say something really rude to them. He knew me too well. He walked towards me, trying to act like he wasn't mad, but I know that face with his pursed lips and his nose all turned in the wrong way. The store made him leave before he barely walked in. He tried not to let things like this get to him, but I could tell he was frustrated. He knew the only reason that he got treated like this was the color of his skin. He had finally had enough of it, but there was nothing he could do about it. He used to tell me that he would make sure his kids never had to feel like this, and that he'd do anything to make sure of that. But in that moment, I could tell he felt helpless, that there was nothing he could possibly do to change how people judged him on his skin color. And I hated seeing him like that, because he never really got upset over things like that. But I couldn't blame him. All I could do was help him feel better about himself and tell him things were going to get better. But things didn't get better. They got worse. It had become a daily thing about store security following him and being denied even to go into some stores, until the racism in this country killed him. Literally killed him. Andrew Hurst thought Kiwanis matched the description and killed him for matching it. And the Portland Police Bureau then blamed Kiwanis for all the crimes committed in the area. And the officer got away with it because he was scared for his life and his coworkers. When Q was simply pulling up his pants while he was on his knees, because everyone knows he sagged his pants. I'll never forget that morning, that first day without Q. I woke up confused because he wasn't in bed with me like usual. My head hurt and I had scrapes on my arms from what I wasn't quite sure. I called his phone to find it on the nightstand next to the bed. I had this sick feeling in my stomach that something was really wrong. I now hate myself for ignoring that feeling. I figured if he wasn't back by the time I'd gotten back from my brother's court, then I'd start worrying, because he'd get mad if I got worried too quickly. When I got back from my brother's court, he was still gone. I still couldn't tell you why that's the moment I first cried, but it was. My brother tagged me in a post 15 minutes later after getting off the phone with me, and I read the article. It said teen killed by police, pronounced dead at the scene. It was right down the street from where we were. It wasn't cute, though. It couldn't be him. He wasn't okay. He was okay. I texted his mom to see if he had gotten in contact with her some way, and when she didn't reply, I called every hospital in Portland asking about the police shooting and if the victim was there, if they could give me a name. I wouldn't believe it was him. My mom called me and told me my uncle was coming to get me, and that's when I realized it was Kiwanis. My best friend, the love of my life, the person I planned my entire life with, was gone. Racism still existed, and I knew that, but I never thought it would kill the love of my life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Evelyn.
My name is Evelyn Murray, and I was invited here to speak on behalf of Moose. Like his grandmother said, that is the name that those that spend time with Moose knew him. And the only time I knew his real name, honestly, was when I was reading it in the newspaper. And I didn't read the newspaper for a while because everybody was telling me about the young man that was killed. And because I haven't been around Moose for a few years. But I used to, the way I met Moose was, I used to go out and hide in Gresham on his grandmother's couch to get away from my grown children so I could have a break. I have 6 girls and 2 boys. And I'm from a family of 12 brothers and 4 sisters. And I grew up in Georgia. And I guess I have to say thank you for having me here and listening. And the one I'm really talking to here today is not you guys, because you guys are not the sovereign Lord Jehovah, and you don't make the final decision. But Nick Fish, as I remember one time you told me, "How have you know I was a civil rights lawyer?" And I said to myself, what does that have to do with tea in China? What are you doing now? You know? I've had principals to tell me, I marched with Martin Luther King. And I had to ask my kids to leave a room because I said, is it all right if I cuss the principal out? You know, because I told him, what the F is that got to do with now? You know, what are you doing now? Like Janet Jackson, what have you done for black people lately? Okay. And this is where I am here with you guys. And Amanda Fritz, with you, I read your history. When you, Teresa Rafer ran against you, I knew nothing about you. So I'm the type of person, I don't vote for somebody just because they're the same color skin as me. I want a person that's just. But I found out that you were a mental health psychiatric nurse. And I said, well, my goodness, she understands what we're going through. And when Donna told me today that you're the one that helped her come today to talk about this issue, I want to be brief. And one of the things, one of the things I want to talk about today is that you, especially you, Mayor, because I've learned that the head that wears the crown is always shaky, and you're the head of the police department. In every city, the mayor controls the police department. And then the chief of police, and you really need to get one, and I'm thinking about running for police chief, okay? Seriously. Because I heard a police chief does not have to be a police officer. Okay? So we need to be brave enough to start a conversation about things that matter. And here it is, 400 and whatever many years later. And ever since Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, white people, the slave master children, that's who you guys are, European, that's your ancestors coming from Europe. Things are changing. There's a wind that's going to be blowing from the south. And I don't know if you guys know about farming, but when this wind starts blowing from the south, that is a bad omen. Okay? And one of the things I want to do is you don't want to have what's happen here. My daughter said, Mom, what if somebody killed one of my babies? She said, I'm not going to be nice. Like Pete say, I don't want to do nice. We get tired of doing nice and being nice. But I read this list. It's called the 8 Stages of Genocide. It talked about genocide is a process that develops in 8 stages that are predictable but not exonerable. In each stage, it is preventable if measures are taken to stop it. And that's what this meeting's about today, the measures that you need to take to stop it. Because if somebody, like my daughter said, I thought about that. I said, Lord, what am I going to do? Because I'm a Jehovah's Witness, right? So I'm supposed to put on a spiritual suit of armor and draw close to God, okay? But you know what I told the brothers at the Kingdom Hall? Peter had a sword. And if he would have been here today, Peter would have had whatever gun that police officer that shot Moose with. Okay? But Jesus told Peter to stand down because this is not my world. If this was my world, I could call down legions of angels. And it wouldn't even be a one-sided war. Have you seen what Hurricane Andrew did down there in Florida? Okay. It looked like somebody got and put the whole little community through a paper shredder. And the next storm after that was Hurricane Katrina. Well, we haven't had a riot of black people in years. And if you guys don't do something, eventually we're going to have to do something. And it will start when you gun down one of my babies. And you, Moose was one of my babies. Moose loved hog maws, didn't he? I used to cook him. He said, you going to be here this weekend? Are you going to cook? Oh, you going to cook? And I fed this young boy. This young boy used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to catch the max to come into Portland to go to school because he was part of the gentrification that was sent out in East County to be forgotten. And you guys don't know Moose. Moose was happy. 5 o'clock every morning, get up to catch the max. Why? Because he couldn't go to school in East County. Why? Because on one end of the hallway, he was a nigger. And on the other end of the hallway, he was a nigger. We say nigger. You say nigger, okay, with the R on it. So he would come home crying. And his uncle, who has passed away, Melvin Dex, passed away from a brain aneurysm. And they talked to Moose, and they said, Moose, you're going to have to be tough. You're going to have to bear up under it. I'm from Georgia. The KKK used to come to my grandfather's yard. They knew better than come dressed in their regal costume, the sheet, and the hood. And they knew better than to let their horse footprint hoof step in my grandmother's yard. I'm from Georgia. Georgia is one of the states that stands their ground. I had a gun when I was 16. I didn't have a permit for it. In Georgia, you don't have to have one. So you don't hear about things happening in Georgia, do you? Because it'll be a shootout at the OK Corral. My grandfather was worse than the Black Panthers were in California. So I grew up with a gun. Don't have me to pick one up. I'm a markswoman. You can make a movie. I could be a sniper on top of the garage. And I'm not threatening you. I'm promising all of you. I almost died on an operating table. I had an aneurysm that ruptured. I had 2 heart attacks on the table. Both kidneys shut down. And then they hooked me up to a life support system to finish the surgery. And I can't believe that Moose is not here. I just can't believe it. What do you want? You better ask yourself that. And you hold your head and say, this is serious. This is so serious. Like the grandma said, I would not want to be in your shoes. So I'm going to have to let the mic go because you keep tapping me. And I can't do the eight steps of genocide, but I wish that everybody would Google it. Okay? Because it talks about classification, symbolization, dehumanizing, organization, polarization, preparation, extermination, and the final one is denial. Now, you go back and keep denying something, okay? Okay? You cannot stay. This is too much. Right now, the United Nations, I heard about the United States walking out on the racism conference race in 2001. And they walked out 9 times in a row. 12 now. 16, really. Okay, I'm going to go. And Okay. 30 seconds. I'm asking that the Don't Shoot Me and all the other groups that are out there get together. It is time for us to take our children off the pipeline to prison. And it means we need to pull our kids out of public school. We can know you guys are not protecting our children, and it's time for us to file a class act suit against the city of Portland. Portland Public Schools is the largest one in the district. And the Board of Education of Oregon. Okay. She said I have to be drinking off. But I have already started a class act suit signature to start a petition. And I'm asking everyone here to put their names on it and sign it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yudi Lewis.
Come on,
man. And she's going to read something someone else sent that couldn't have come. You have something to say before?
My name is Yudi Lewis, and I do have something to say beforehand. Qantas was a beautiful soul, and he will not be forgotten. And the Moose Movement will stand no matter who tries to shut it down. We will continue to fight for what we believe in and for the justice for Qantas, because he was silenced, and that wasn't fair. He had no way to stand up for himself. But I also have something to read for Pamela Rogers, who couldn't be here today. Where, oh, where has the reason gone? Reason is judgment's ability to think, collect information, survey, weighing of probability, and to calculate with accuracy. Where has reason gone? If we are going to give officers the ability to use their own judgments to shoot and kill, then we need to be sure that they have the ability to have some sound reason with accuracy. Every man, woman, and child depends on these officers' ability to have some reason with accuracy in high-pressure situations. What law, ordinances, or statute states that an officer has the right to shoot and kill an unarmed man? If there be no such law, ordinance, or statute that gives him the right, then may I ask, where are these officers getting their information from, that they can shoot and kill unarmed people, especially people of color? Are these officers getting this information from their own belief? Is it from their environment? I believe that it is imperative that we should know the answer to these types of questions before we give them a badge, a uniform, a gun, and the authority to shoot and kill with no fear or concern of prosecution. We need to get some sort of protocol of psychology testing that looks specifically at a potential officer's abilities to have sound reason with accuracy, and that they have balance in their conclusions. Our officers need to understand that they serve and protect justice, and they are to deal with the public with a just and balanced hand, according to the standard that is set by the integrity of true justice. True justice has its own standard and integrity as defined by dictionary.com, and those who serve and protect it must adhere to justice standards. No man is above true justice. This was written on behalf of Qantas Hayes by Pamela Rogers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Terrific.
For the record, my name is Teresa Rayford, and I'm a fourth-generation Oregonian. Also, for the record, I'm just thankful that Amanda and Chloe gave us the opportunity to bring our family in here and to speak on the record in regards to the issues that we're dealing with. And I don't want to say that our children are issues. I'm thinking that the unprofessional conduct of our police force and the way that the union is antagonizing the city council is the issue. I want to just, for the record, say that today is Mac Tay Day. Deontay Keller was murdered. Today would have been his 42nd birthday. He was my cousin. He was killed by the Portland police as well. I have several cousins that were killed by the Portland police. I want this child's generation not to have to fight against the same abusive of power that we're fighting against. Somebody need to leave my mic alone. I'll talk loud. It's not fair. It's not fair. We're looking at a board of white people. You guys look stiff to me. And I know that your hearts work, and I know that you have a consciousness, but you look really stiff to me. Because as somebody that's been hurt by this system, when I tell you that it hurts, and I bring families to you that are mourning the death of their children, you've used violence against us. You hurt us. You use military weapons against us. You use chemicals against us. You use the proper opportunity to use media against us to criminalize us and make our voices unjust. You humiliate us. You humiliate us so bad that our families are ashamed of us, and kids in our family don't know that they matter. It's embarrassing and it's a shame. When we were out there on Malcolm X Day with the babies in front of the police station across the street from the Boys and Girls Club where Qantas used to go, they shuffled the kids through the back door while we talked about Malcolm X being a teacher and him being a leader and that our families matter and our babies matter. They shuffled them to the back door as the police looked at it and smirked at us. They took those babies in the back because we were saying Black Lives Matter. And they came back afterwards and they said, we know Black Lives Matter. But the Boys and Girls Club and the police and all the teachers and everybody else that propagates that they like Black Lives when we're not around, that support the protest when it's permitted, that stands next to you when you go to them because they appointed or they're a gatekeeper upon, when they act like Black Lives Matter, but they don't speak about us and they don't speak to us and they put their nose up in the air, that's not the truth. That's not the truth. This child is the truth. His grandma's the truth. His cousin's the truth. His little sister's the truth. That baby right there, they ain't come down to be at a PBL, but his brother is the truth. What y'all did to us in the street on the day that we buried that baby when his great-grandma put those, that can never happen again. That happened. That happened. That's an experience. It can never happen again. You took away from the family dignity. You took the family's dignity away from them. You allowed racists and trolls and bigots to humiliate them even more, even to this day. The videos are still out there. They're still humiliating them. You took away someone's life systemically because you propagated the fear of black people. We know how benefits happen in city when you have terror. If you tell somebody that there's something to be afraid of and they put more money into a budget so that you can mandate safety and protection for them, not us. You can't use us that way. We're human. When our babies die, we cry. It's not because we're arrogant. It's not when we say that we have a problem with somebody that is a leader. We're not trying to be vindictive. When we come into this room, and as I have since 2010 when my nephew was murdered, I'm not coming here because I'm bored or indecent. I'm coming here because his life mattered.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kenova Harry. You can hop out. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sonoba Hayes, and I just wanted to pose some questions for you guys from a black mother. I have a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old little black boy. You guys will never understand the anxiety of simple stuff like your babies playing outside, you know, having to come in contact with the police. Since the stuff happened with Qantas, me and my husband have been in the grocery store and saw a 9 or 10-year-old little boy being targeted by white employees, being accused of stealing when he had a receipt in his hand. You guys will never have to understand that. You know, and I understand, like they said earlier, for police working in an urban community that they're not familiar with, they are going to behave in a way that's different as if they had grew up in that community because they've socialized with us. They understand our culture, how we dress, how we talk. They won't be afraid of certain things because they've experienced certain things. My 10-year-old wanted to be a police officer since as long as I can remember. We always encouraged him. That's a great occupation. It's something we encouraged him to do. He doesn't want to be a police officer anymore. What do we tell our sons when they encounter problems at school, when they encounter problems in their neighborhood, with their teachers, with other adults in the community? We have a real fear of telling our black boys to call the police because for them calling the police over a simple altercation, over somebody hitting them, punching them, we can't tell them to defend themselves because you'll put them in prison. We can't tell them to call the police because the police could murder them.
and there's no consequences for that. So where does that leave our kids? Where does that leave our community? Everybody's talking about they're tired of black people killing black people and taking things into their own hands. But what do? There's nobody to defend us. There's nobody to take up for us. It's nothing like wondering and losing a cousin. Somebody, I've known Quanah since he was 3 years old. He was when they say he was alive, he was alive. Mm-hmm. He was full of life. He was an awesome kid. I went to school for education. I had years of education. I've been working with kids since I was 13. And when I found out what happened to Quanah, there's nothing in my mind could ever make me picture Quanah as a threat to anybody. And I've worked with kids who I've been like, oh, they're going to be a problem in all different cultures. And so it's easy to sit here and talk to you guys and everybody pour their hearts out and try to get you to understand, but you can't understand. You'll never have to close your eyes, or your kids will never be at a party and you have to worry about if some white police officer is going to shoot your son in the head at a party because they got a call of a noise disturbance. You guys will never have to go through that. And I guarantee if it happened, that police officer would immediately be fired, probably thrown in prison and lose his job if he was to kill one of your children for a perceived threat, when they're constantly killing our sons, our doctors, our lawyers, our police officers, our firemen. They're murdering them in the streets before they even get a chance. Most people, as teenagers, make mistakes. Nobody knows what happened leading up to what happened with Quanah, and nobody will ever know because he was murdered, and that's just the truth. And the sad part about it is, because nobody across the nation seems to be taking any accountability, it's going to continue to happen to our little black boys. Because we can say we care, we can say we love, but those things are actions. When you care and you love, it's displayed by how you treat other people and the reform that you see in your community. And I don't see that anywhere.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kathleen. Okay. Come on, sit beside him, Kathy. Tell you your full name.
I'm Kawan Blackman. Kawan is his uncle, favorite uncle. I was just sitting there thinking, I wasn't going to say nothing, but a lot of things came across my mind. And I know when I'm driving, I get off work at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I drive home. I live in Milwaukee. And I get so nervous about getting pulled over for no reason, because it happened to me plenty of times. They see me, make a U-turn, follow me miles, and then decide to pull me over once they feel that I'm at my destination. He's home, he feel free or whatever. But they follow me because I was racially profiled. Now, when they stop me and they question me, ask me what am I doing, which has nothing to do with a traffic stop. Nothing. Well, she should come to me. It's like, well, if he stop you, he'll ask you for your license and insurance. You'll ask him, what did I do wrong? And he'll tell you. I ask him, what am I doing wrong? He never tells me nothing. He never gives me a ticket or nothing. He just wanted to see what I was doing because I was a black man at the wrong time of night. And they see me as a gang member because I'm young, black, see our black teenagers as a gang member, when your police officers are the real gang members. Yeah. The real gang members. Yeah. Now I get home, I like to sit down and watch the crime shows, not the fake ones like CSI. I watch the real stuff, Forensic Files, Cold Case, First 48. And it's always two outcomes. Life without or the death penalty. I never seen that happen to a cop. Ever. Ever happen. And my meter's running out, so that's all I got to say.
Thank you.
My name is Catherine Kendall. I am a retired college professor, and I'd like to begin, as I always do, I'd like to know, by a show of hands, on your honor, how many of you have read The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander? Y'all have not done your homework. Not one of you has read this book? I am astonished. This book is a history of how we got to be how we are. I would like to donate this book to you directly, Ted Wheeler. I would like you to do your homework. I never met Quantas Hayes except through the words of his grandmother and his mother and his friends. And he is one of my children. I never met Ted Wheeler's daughter, and she is one of my children. Dan Salzman says his focus is well-being of children, so I figure Dan, like me, knows we all need the children. I am a biological mother, an adoptive mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, and I am an old queer woman who raised my children as a single mother, and I know poverty. I come to the mayor and the city council to fight for those most vulnerable to abuse by the police, our black, brown, and native children. There is terror in Portland. The terror comes to us in a black uniform that looks like something a robot would wear in a Transformers movie. The terror is an army of massive black boots, shin pads, knee pads, bulletproof vests, face shields, helmets. They carry tasers, pepper spray, guns, flashbang grenades, tear gas, and truncheons aimed at the fragile skulls of unarmed, undefended protesters and their children. Police beat and kill our children and are rewarded with weeks, months, even years of paid administrative leave. They get a bonus for killing our children. They get paid time off, time when they can go to their children's sports events and school concerts and graduations and weddings. Our dead children have no sports events, concerts, graduations, or weddings. The children of our dead children are worlds unborn. And they will always be unborn. We have a madman in the White House, a planet going up in flames, full of violence and hatred. We need our unborn children to save the world with love and wisdom. But we have failed them. Every one of our dead children is a horrible, unforgivable failure. So here is my recommendation. Strip the Portland police of the military equipment, guns, tasers, riot gear, riot vans, tear gas, pepper spray, flashbang grenades that they use on us when we protest the deaths of our children. We are not an invading army. We are the grieving families of murdered children. We are justifiably angry, unarmed people demanding justice from a government that owes it to us. We put our bodies and our voices on the line because we have no weapons. And you meet us with militarized police. Tell the police not to terrorize our black children and our anarchist children. Tell them they are the violence in this society. If you cannot control the police, then please give the bulletproof vests and shin guards, the helmets and shields to our children. I'm going to say the names of some of our children killed by police in Multnomah County, where the mayor and this council have jurisdiction. I ask you to hear their names as if they are your children's names. And when I say their ages, be aware they will never grow any older. Terrell Johnson, 24, 2 weeks ago. Quantas Hayes, 17, 2 months ago. Darris Johnson, 26, arrested for not having taillights, died in custody. Keaton Otis, 25. Aaron Campbell, 25. James Jahar Perez, 28. Kendra James, 21. Jose Mejia Poot, 29. And because I know his mother, Christopher Kalonji, 19, killed in Clackamas County last year. And here are the names of the perpetrators.
Andrew Hurst, Scott McAllister, Jeffrey Bell, now Captain of Internal Affairs, Jason Sari, Ron Freshour, Jim Dufresne, Cody Byrne, now an Assistant District Attorney, Andrew Paulus, Kyle Nice, Christopher Humphreys. They are still around to threaten us. Most are still on the public payroll. In March, when protesters set up a camp outside Ted Wheeler's house, the mayor was understandably protective of his family. He didn't want his daughter to be frightened. We don't want that either. We don't want any children to be frightened. Pete Simpson said, speaking to the protesters, if you threaten someone and cause fear, charges of menacing, stalking, or harassment could be laid against you. I say to Ted Wheeler and Pete Simpson, if you allow the police to threaten our children and cause fear, if you menace our children, stalk our children, harass our children, you plant the seeds of violence. If you kill our children, their blood and our grief is on your hands to the end of days. I hope the police commissioner sees every death at the hands of the police as the complete failure it is.
Thank you.
Red. Are you red? Red Hamilton?
Yeah,
I'm
just
sorry. Only got 10 minutes.
So. I'll be quick. Okay. There's nothing that I can say that's going to... I would just like to echo everybody that's been testifying here that you guys need to make a change. And I just want to say the Asada Shakur chant. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must love each other and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
One more time. It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and support each other.
We must love each other and support each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
Thank you. For the record, Red Hamilton.
If we could get a new United States of America flag in here, I really appreciate it. I mean, you've been mayor for what now, 5 months, and you ain't got no new flag in here yet. And I appreciate it if you use B Company across the street to clean us, to keep your white flag clean. Your whites ain't whites, your reds ain't right, and can't nobody see no stars on the stripes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Lanita James. Whatever you got to say.
Lanita, talk about your friend Keith.
So, I know these guys from church. Their families, obviously, a lot of us black people grew up in the same areas and whatnot. But the day that Qantas was killed was actually the day after my birthday. And I watched it on the news, and my daughter and his, doesn't Qantas have a sister?
Mm-hmm.
What's her name?
Nevaeh.
My daughter's name is Nevaeh as well. They're friends. I had to deal with my daughter crying about her friend's little brother being killed. And go to my aunt's house to ask for some advice because I don't have a mom myself. My mom passed away. My cousin's birthday was February 9th. She I told her that her friend had got killed. He had just left their house. This death affected all of us as a people, but Keaton was my friend. We went to school together. And the day that he was killed it's like one of those things you can remember for the rest of your life, me seeing my friend's picture on the news. The odd thing about it is I have a little son, too. He's actually biracial. And just growing up thinking that, you know, we were invincible until I watched that my friend was shot. He had 23 bullets in him. They were pulling bullets out of his underwear. Well, his dad went every month to the site where his son was murdered at and died from a broken heart because he had no answers. Mm-hmm. 3 years after his son died, he died from a heart attack. A broken heart. As a parent, could you imagine how that feels? Keaton never had no gun. I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, if they ever produced a weapon, but he didn't have a gun. As a parent, not as a white person and a black person, as a parent, it's our duty to make sure that the rest of our children's lives, they're protected. They don't have to drive down the street and not be able to put their hoodie on because they are cold. Because that was his crime, having a hoodie on, driving down the street by Lloyd Center in a nice newer car that his mom bought and let her son use. I'm pretty sure when your daughter is of age to drive, you're going to give her the keys to your vehicle. She's not going to have, you would want to, you're going to teach her how to drive, right? So you would want to think that your child's going to come home safe in your vehicle, and his mom didn't get that opportunity. I'm seeing that I might not get that opportunity with my son or my daughters. And it's time, like, you guys stepped up and made that change. Like, I was here on October 12th when we got beat up and kicked out of City Hall. I kind of just blended in with the media because I didn't want to get beat up and kicked out of City Hall. Like, we're getting accosted and abused and beat up for saying we matter too. We're not saying y'all don't matter. We're saying we matter too. We've watched so many of our friends and families and relatives go down this, you know, the school to prison pipeline. My brother's getting out. He's got 84 days on a 15-year bid because the DA thought it was a funny thing to make him sit in the county for 3 years before sitting in a trial so he can catch the Measure 11 charge after Measure 11 took effect.
Now, 5 minutes left.
Stuff got to change in Portland. I was born and raised here. My grandma came from Birmingham. She lived out in, what was that, out there where the flood happened? Vanport. We've been here. But we don't get respect like you guys get. We get kicked out and told to shut up and not, you know, I was just talking to the officers where a white man was told he could call us B-words and whatever he wanted because he had a First Amendment right to speak, but we had to shut up. We had to relocate.
Shit's
gotta change. Sorry, y'all. I'm out.
Thank you.
Irene Kalani. I am Irene Kalonji, the mother of Christopher Kalonji. I'm here to testify police violence in my family lives. 16 years ago, we came to USA looking for better life for our family. It was myself, my husband, and 2 boys. We came to USA believe that this country give us freedom and protection for our children from racism and violation. Children grew up. And nightmare start when my youngest son, Christopher, went to the Portland city on October 21, 2015. He gets stopped by cops because he looks suspicious for them. Big afro, and clothes with hoodie. They want him show his ID, but at the same time, they did not represent themselves. My son tells them they were not doing right, and they don't have reason to stop him. I knew my rights, he say. That makes them mad. They illegally arrest him, beat him in the head. As a result, he has PTSD. On January 28, 2016, Christopher has appointed court day for this previous event. He was scared to go, and as a result, he has a mental breakdown. 911 was called for help. This time, Clackamas County Sheriff respond. Come and met my son sitting on the window without clothes. Let him bleeding to death in his room for 4.5 hours. They destroy our apartment. They murder my son. They destroy our family lives, and they get justified in their action. Protect and serve their mission. And as a mother, I want to know who they protect, who they serve. Police continue to destroy our lives, thousand young people taken from us every year. And we are Mother for Justice demanding police reform and indiction for murder cops. Murder cannot be justified in any forms. No. And I'm speaking for all this mother. And today, I'm Christopher Kalonji. I'm Body Phillips. I'm Quanis Hayes. I'm Terrell Johnson. I'm Chase Thompson. I'm Chase Hammer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have just one more person if you have the time. And it's a presentation by Dan Hanneman of Portland Cop Watch.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of City Council. I'm Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch. I wrote up some information about Portland police shootings in the black community for the anniversary celebration of Keith Otis's life on May 12, 7 years to the day since Otis's death. Cop Watch has supported countless families who've lost their loved ones, and we're here today to support the family of Quanis Hayes, and I'm honored to be here. Thank you. Quanis was the first African-American killed by PPB gunfire since Keith Otis. In the interim, there were the death in custody of Darris Johnson, the shootings and woundings of Juwan Blackman and Denoris McClendon, the missed bullet fired at Kevin Moffitt. Terrell Johnson, shot and killed May 10, has been described as being of African-American heritage. Quanis was 17 and on his knees when officers thought he was going for a weapon, even though they had their sniper rifle pointed at him and thus had the advantage, even if he truly was armed. Johnson was 24 and houseless and perhaps living with mental illness. He allegedly displayed a utility knife and was killed. Over 10 years, the Portland police have shot or shot at 37 people and killed 22. 9 of the 37 were African American, or 24% in a city that's 6% black. 5 of those who died were African Americans, or 23%. Including Darris Johnson's death in custody, that means of 38 deadly force incidents, 26% of the subjects and 26% of those who died were African American. 3 other people identified as people of color were killed, which were shot or killed, which means 34% of people shot at or killed by police were people of color in a city that's 77% white. We count at least 6 houseless persons, including Mr. Johnson, who have been killed since 2010, none of whom were armed with guns. It seems like a pattern of overreacting to weapons far less threatening than firearms if wielded by a poor person. As part of the settlement agreement with the DOJ, the PPB puts out quarterly reports on their use of force. The fourth quarter 2016 report shows 30% of those subjected to use of force were African American. Again, it's a city that's 6% black. This is about average. The most recent stops data for third quarter 2016 show 13.5% of traffic stops were conducted against African American Portlanders, also about average, and this is after 16 years of collecting data. Pedestrian stops are down from about 24% to 10%, but that information is likely incomplete since it shows only 59 people total stopped on foot over a 3-month period. Certainly, this doesn't include stop and talks, stop and frisks, or mere conversations. The more telling figure of whether drivers had contraband, most recently reported for June 2015, shows African Americans were found to have drugs or weapons in just 10% of searches, while white drivers were found with such contraband 31% of the time, or 3 times more often. To violate the state law banning police profiling based on race, gender, housing status, and other criteria, an officer would have to say, "The only reason I stopped that person was because he was black." The law says the police action must be based solely on the various protected classes listed. The Portland Police rewrote their profiling policy using that state language. This needs to be changed. After all, if two cars with broken taillights go past a cop, one with a white driver and one with a black driver, and they